Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Just the forces of nature, just the tides crumbling these massive pieces of ice, weighing just, the total sum of billions and billions of tons of ice being moved and crumpled. That's really unbelievable. Extraordinary sight.
Global warming in action, you might say, from Sebastian Copeland's soon-to-be premiere documentary, Into the Cold. Copeland spent 35 days dragging a 200-pound sled over the frozen Atlantic Ocean in 47 below zero temperatures, walking to the top of the Earth to raise awareness for global warming. He documents his journey and the stunning Arctic landscape in the self-produced film, which is premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival later this month. Sebastian Copeland, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thanks for having me here, Brian.
And .Earth blogger Andrew Refkin is still with us. First of all, congratulations on being one of the very few who have made it to the North Pole on foot. Why would someone who lives in Los Angeles go to the front lines of global warming like this, and what was it like?
Well, yeah, I've been committed to environmental advocacy for some time, and I'm also an adventurer, an extreme athlete. So the nothing communicates climate change better than frozen environments, and obviously as the ice is being impacted by climate change, they make a good platform for communication.
Well, some people may admire what you've accomplished physically, but think, well, here's another pretty well-off young white guy trekking to the Arctic to tell us something about his observations of ice, like that proves global warming or is supposed to make us change our lives. Why does your trip matter to anyone besides you? Why shouldn't we look at the overall science more than this kind of film?
Well, I mean, the first thing is I'm also a photographer. So in the cornerstone of my philosophy as an environmental photographer is to help people fall in love with their world. The notion is that you're not going to save what you don't love. So I love these environments, these far and away environments that are difficult to reach and that feel so foreboding for people. And yet, as the world is shrinking, we live in an environment where between transportation and especially the impact that we have remotely on these environments, we are having an effect in essentially what is our backyard. And whether it's Antarctica or the Arctic or Greenland or places that seem so foreign to us, in reality, they are impacting us in a very, very direct way. So I, you know, journey and travel into these places, and that is my personal passion. And what I come back with is both information and photography, or film in this case, and try to really sensitize people into what is happening in their world.
Andrew, you also trekked to the Arctic and
flew on an airplane.
Right?
We landed on the sea ice at the North Pole, and I was there with climate scientists doing a project to try to understand what's going on in that ocean underneath the sea ice back in 2003. And it is an amazing experience to be there. To me, too, the importance in conveying what's happening in a place like that is also to remind people, as Sebastian said, that the world is a small place. The pole is connected dynamically to what we experience down here. And it's the one place on Earth I've been where human affairs are completely irrelevant. You're on this shifting matrix of sea ice, and you heard the sounds. That brought back memories. You're in a place where we're not in control, at least haven't been historically, but now we are in a way influencing the fate even of that kind of place.
Here's a clip from the end of the film as Sebastian Copeland is on his way back from the North Pole.
As the world celebrates Earth Day, I think of how important it is to get out of this false sense of security that we've developed as cities dwellers. Lulled away by the convenience of technology, from the responsibility and the connection we have to the land that hosts us.
And there you go. You referenced Earth Day, which is, of course, today. The hook for this program is Earth Day's 40th birthday. Did you come home last year on Earth Day, or why did Earth Day get in there?
I was actually on the ice during Earth Day, and I was communicating. I was blogging every day from the ice, so this is actually a section of my blog. Most of the film was narrated through the blog that I wrote on the ice.
Tell us a bit about your unique upbringing in relation to the environment. I understand your grandfather led safaris in the 1940s.
Well, he didn't actually lead safari. He was a surgeon, and he was born in Ireland, but spent a lot of time in India. So he originally was a hunter and hunted in East Bengal for tigers and various big game. and eventually in midlife traded his gun for a camera, and at the end of the Raj in India went to Swaziland and lived in South Africa that way, and conducted photo safaris this time in Botswana and Tanzania and places like that. So he had a really strong connection with the land and communicated to me that that communion with nature, which is still prevalent.
And did that influence your activism and perspective on the world and maybe even on the state of climate change?
Well, what it did is really connect me with nature in a sense, and made me really appreciate the quality of what it is to journey into an environment. What Andrew said earlier about the North Pole is what I feel very much about nature in general, is that we're not in control. We live literally, as I mentioned in the film, in this full sense of security. But anytime there's a natural event, whether it be an earthquake or, of course, the volcano recently, or all those are there to remind us that we are so fragile. We're just one in 30 million species on this planet, no more, no less. And, you know, some of them, of course, can be traced back to anthropogenic activities, and others are more natural occurrence. But they all point to one direction, is that we're very fragile in this system. We're not the king of nature, which is what the Age of Enlightenment has sort of, you know, conditioned us to think that we were. We're really only one in 30 million species. We appeared 150,000 years ago, you know, more than likely within the next millennia, perhaps, you know, there's a very likelihood that on this planet, anyhow, we have no future.
Andy Refkin, how long have you been an environmental journalist?
For 25 plus years.
And you seem to have landed primarily, maybe overwhelmingly, on this issue of global warming as your central interest, yes?
Well, and biodiversity loss. And basically, the core question of Dot Earth is how we head toward roughly 9 billion people without totally screwing things up. So it has social, environmental.
So population. I should have mentioned population, too, because that's, of course, central to what you write.
Yeah, that got me in trouble with Rush Limbaugh, as you know. So the bottom line is we're at this amazing juncture in the history of our, or the short history of our species. We're in an astonishing growth spurt the last couple of centuries. As I wrote last year on the blog, you know, we're kind of like poised between puberty and adulthood as a species. You know, what do we want to be when we grow up? And those are big thoughts. So how do you mesh those big thoughts with specific actions? That's one of the big challenges now.
Where has environmentalism gotten it wrong? You mentioned Rush Limbaugh, and I don't want to really use him as, you know, an emblem of skepticism. He would say, and some skeptics would say, who may be more scientifically based, that the Earth is more resilient than environmental chicken littles, if you will, are constantly screaming that it is. Is there, as we look at the 40th anniversary of Earth Day and the modern environmental movement, are there places where the science has been uncertain and then has turned out to have gotten it wrong in terms of what the movement has picked up on, that make you stand back and look with awe at nature in another way, in the sense of its resilience?
Well, not just nature, but humanity. You know, there was the population bomb, and I can't tell you how many people on my blog the last few days, as I've written about Earth Day, have been quoting Paul Ehrlich and John Holdren, the science advisor to the president now, for statements they made in the 70s that they now acknowledge were wrong. I do think there's long been a tendency to try to over-push the case, to oversimplify, especially with global warming. It's the outcomes that matter most to society still remain uncertain. How warm it will get from a certain buildup of greenhouse gases, how fast sea levels will rise. And if you're not honest about the true complexity, as well as the history of resilience, as you make your case trying to nudge a static population to do something like an energy revolution, then you will fail in the end, because the other side, you're just giving ammunition to those who want stasis. And I've been trying to make that point for years, and I get hammered sometimes by the more liberal side of the environmental movement for trying to find a way to embrace the complexity and the resilience and still build a case for action.
Well, happy birthday, Earth Day, as it turns 40 years old. The first Earth Day was on April 22nd, 1970. Starting this weekend, Sebastian Copeland's movie Into the Cold will be playing at the Tribeca Film Festival. You can find information about screenings and tickets at tribecafilm.com. Sebastian, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And we continue this Earth Month series with Andrew Refkin from the New York Times.Earth blog next Thursday at this same time. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.